Headlines here on says it warned Baghdad multiple times not to allow its oil to be used for sabotage against Iran a day after Iranian missiles hit an Israeli site in Iraq's Kurdistan. Ukraine demands an immediate ceasefire and the withdrawal of Russian troops from its soil during a fourth round of negotiations to end more than 2 weeks of fighting. And the U.S. warns China against helping Russia evade sanctions as Beijing accuses Washington of spreading disinformation about the military aid to Moscow. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisoum Shahmadi and these are our top stories this hour. Iran warns it will not tolerate insecurity emanating from Iraq. That is a day after the Islamic Republic carried out a missile strike on an Israeli center in the Iraqi Kurdistan region.
It is in no way acceptable that one of our neighbors, which has deep ties with us, becomes a focal point for threats against Islamic Republic of Iran. Unfortunately, the Zionist regime has created insecurity for Iran from within Iraq numerous times. Some congregations of anti-revolutionaries in Iraqi Kurdistan region and terrorist groups in that region have created insecurity for Iran.
The foreign ministry spokesman noted that Tehran has time and again warned Baghdad not to allow the Iraqi borders to become bases of conspiracy, plots and sabotage against Iran. Khatib Zadeh called on Iraq to prevent third parties from launching attacks on the Islamic Republic. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has said that the strike on the Israeli center in Erbil was in response to what it called the crimes of the Zionist regime. Israel has long been blamed for a wide range of anti-Iran measures, including acts of sabotage against its nuclear facilities and the assassination of Iranian scientists. Political commentator Alija Manyar believes that the Iraqi government's failure to exert its authority has provided the grounds for Israel to maintain ties with the Kurdistan region.
We see in Erbil, Kurdistan, the Iraqi government doesn't have authority over the Peshmerga when Sayyid Muqtada Sadr, the Sadrist leader, called them a militia. And then Iraqi intelligence services don't know what's happening in Erbil because they don't have the authority over the Kurdish intelligence services there. The Kurdistani army do not respond to the commander-in-chief of the all armed forces, that is the prime minister. And we see that there are visas that allocated to Erbil, not to Baghdad, incompatible with Baghdad and Erbil and vice versa. So we also hear recently that the Kurdistan refused the decision of the federal court. They sell their oil to Turkey and to Israel, and they rebuff all the decision of the central government in Baghdad. So it is up to Iraq to make up its mind to consider Kurdistan as part of its sovereignty or not.
More casualties are reported as fighting and shelling continues on the 19th day of the Russian offensive in Ukraine. Ukraine claims the Russian military has shelled a residential block in the capital, Kiev, leaving at least one person dead and three others injured. Two people are killed after an aircraft factory came under shelling in the city. In southern Ukraine, authorities say nine people have died in Russian attacks in the city of Mykolaiv near the Black Sea. The strategic southeastern city of Mariupol, about 2,400 civilians have died so far. The figure was provided by the EU foreign policy chief Joseph Borrell. Russia has also unveiled the latest fatalities on its side. The country's defense ministry says 20 pro-Russians were killed in eastern Donetsk during the Ukrainian missile strikes. Earlier, we spoke to our correspondent Robert Carter, who joined us with an update on the situation of the Ukrainian refugees fleeing into a neighboring country. So let's take a listen.
Right on one of the many border crossings separating Poland and Ukraine, there is a humanitarian relief effort that's also going on here as refugees come in. There are some supplies that have been donated either by NGOs or by local Polish citizens. I did actually manage to speak to the mayor He's known as the president in Lublin, the city which I'm staying at, just an hour or so away from this border checkpoint. And I challenged him on this very issue and said, are you treating Ukrainian refugees in exactly the same way that you treat refugees from, say, Syria, for example? And he did claim that the authorities wished to treat all the same, but he did admit that, look, the situation in Ukraine, they are their neighbors, they are their brothers, and they are doing their best to prioritize that refugee crisis. So I think it is a truth, a sad truth, that we all have to address here as best as we can. People are being treated differently in some cases because of the color of their skin.
One of Ukraine's top negotiators says the fourth round of peace talks with Russia has been paused and it is set to resume on Tuesday. Mykhailo Polyak made the announcement in a Twitter post saying that the pause is technical due to additional work in subgroups and clarification of individual definitions. Before the talks, Kiev said that it will be seeking an immediate ceasefire, the withdrawal of Russian troops and security guarantees from Moscow, and only after that the two sides can discuss regional relations or their political differences. Earlier, Kiev also renewed calls for further Western pressure on Moscow to avoid a, quote, larger war. The Ukrainian foreign minister urged Western allies to increase anti-Russian sanctions and supply Ukraine with more weapons. The Kremlin spokesman dismisses claims by the U.S. officials that Russia had asked China for military equipment to be used in the Ukraine conflict. Dmitry Peskov says Russia can take full control of major Ukrainian cities without any help or military assistance from China. He says Moscow possesses its own independent potential to continue its military operation in Ukraine. China also hits back at Washington for making these allegations.
Recently, the U.S. has been spreading disinformation against China in regards to the Ukraine issue time after time with sinister intentions.
The Chinese official called for restraint to ease tensions over Ukraine and resolve the conflict diplomatically. He described Beijing's role in the conflict as constructive. China insists that it is acting as a neutral mediator between Russia and Ukraine. We discussed the issue with our guests in our news review program. Let's take a listen.
Okay, let me invite you two guests and get some insight. Barry Grossman, international lawyer and public analyst, so join me from Bali, Indonesia. Also, John Stebling, author and commentator, is joining us from Indre, Norway. Good to see you, gentlemen. Let's go to Bala first. Barry, China saying I'm acting as a neutral mediator, and the West, you hear what they're calling, you know, they're threatening China. So what do you think is happening? Why should China offer any help to Russia?
Well, the question is whether Russia actually asked for help and whether, in fact, China is offering it. They certainly have tightened up their relationship in recent months and become very close allies. It's also quite clear that China has publicly stated that as far as this crisis in the Ukraine goes, it considers that it's the U.S. that's responsible for creating over the past several years the situation which inevitably has led to where we're at now. What we see coming from Washington is them doubling down to spread this this undeclared war against any nation which doesn't wholeheartedly submit to the United States and do whatever they're told to do based on the U.S.'s assumption that it's somehow the leader of the known universe and in a position that's so special that it can dictate to other nations what their foreign policy should be. Certainly, if anybody tried to tell the United States that it should not do anything to help one of its allies and would face serious consequences if it did, it would lead to an uproar, an immediate uproar, and would be unheard of. Even supported nations like Israel that are constantly in violation of international law. So it beggars belief that we have this third rung also ran threatening China and, for that matter, Russia.
Okay, now let's take a look at social media and see what people have commented regarding this story. So the first post says, so in the eyes of the USA, everybody is allowed to help Ukraine, but if China wants to do what they want to do, it's wrong. Why is U.S. deciding again for the rest of the world? Second one goes, the best choice for China is to stay far away from the conflict and shouldn't support either of these countries. And then we have a post by JB saying that does America understand that China is a sovereign country that is not in any form of obligatory alliance that makes them adopt America's foreign policies? Just like America supports Ukraine, China has every right to support Russia, even if it's not morally right. There is another one saying that the USA is in a tight quarter now. Threaten China won't work. USA fooled Ukraine to go into war. Now Russia is on the verge of running over Ukraine, and the USA cannot help. Then Jeremy says that's easy to say, but what do sanctions on China look like? Ending imports does not seem likely. China is so integrated into Western economies, and any move likely will hurt the West a substantial amount. Joel Krager says that the U.S. is facing many more consequences than China. If it presses things, it has trillions of dollars of debt outstanding and its credit can be completely destroyed. China has carefully protected itself from national debt since the pandemic, and that's a strategic decision. Yeah, very good point that Barry made, John, that the U.S. is free to do whatever it wants to help whoever it wants, no matter for whatever reason. So what's wrong? China is a sovereign country, even if it offers to help, which Russia says that's not the case. What's wrong with offering help? The U.S. is pouring billions of dollars to Ukraine. The different European countries are doing the same thing.
Well, as I said, I think last time I was on here with you, propaganda campaign from the United States around this crisis, so-called crisis, has been just mind-boggling, astounding. I've never seen this level of Russophobia and spin and bias in reporting, never ever in my life. You would think that that Putin, I mean, it's being described as Putin's war of choice. You would think that 7 years of shelling and terrorizing Donbass simply had never existed, that Putin hadn't gone to the UN in 2015 asking for help brokering a peace settlement. You would think that the U.S. orchestrating a bloody coup in 2014 that put a very hyper-nationalist neo-Nazi party in power in Ukraine, that that never happened, that somehow Zelensky oversees a paragon of tolerant democracy. And, of course, it's not the case. The government in Kiev has threatened Russia. They've said if they got nuclear weapons, if they got into NATO somehow, which is never probably going to happen, but they have said they would turn the nukes on Moscow. That was their goal.
Okay, appreciate your comments and insight. Barry Grossman, international lawyer and political analyst in Bali, Indonesia. John Stepling, author and commentator from Indra, Norway.
Iranian president calls on the international organizations to break their silence on Saudi Arabia's mass execution of innocent people. Ebrahim Raisi has slammed countries that proclaim to be human rights defenders for their passive approach towards Riyadh's brutal tactic. He said the West's double standards and silence on the execution shows that they use human rights as a political tool to serve their own interests and against independent states. Reactions followed the Saudi announcement that it had executed 81 people over alleged terror-related charges in a single day. Reports say over half of those executed were Shia inmates, including teenagers who were detained from the Qatifa region and held on different charges without fair trial. Political and resistance groups from Lebanon, Yemen, and Iraq have also denounced the killings. That brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio. From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, close up, Iran.
An Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. In our country, Iran, as we get close to the end of Iranian calendar year, people prepare themselves for welcoming the new year. One of the traditions of welcoming the new year is Khane Tekani. Based on Khane Tekani tradition, people start cleaning up their homes from any contamination, dust or earth, so in this way, they welcome spring season. The main philosophy of Khane Tekani is making change and development in behavior and clearing heart from hatred. Iranians since old times have been on the idea that by throwing away all unnecessary home appliances as well as cleaning up the necessary items at home, get their home fresh and happy. Some psychologists believe that Khane Tekani gives people the courage to get rid of dependencies. Khane Tekani is the symbol of throwing away bad memories and preparing our mind for saving good, beautiful memories. I am now in my grandma's house. I'm going to help her in Khane Tekhani. The first place we Iranians start for cleaning up is the kitchen. Kitchen is a room for preparing food and getting family members together. By cleaning the kitchen, we actually bring back the soul of cleanness and calm home. I'd better make the cupboards empty and then throw away some of the devices, which I'm sure my grandma doesn't use them. And, of course, be careful. She won't understand because she's interested in keeping unnecessary, useless items. Families were crowded, so everyone helped in Khane Tekhani. However, today families are smaller, and so there will be no choice but to get the house chores done by house cleaning services companies. Well, I've rolled the carpets and I'm waiting for one of these home services companies to come to the door and take these carpets. Here they are. Hi, I've been waiting for you. Oh, well, it's on the second floor. Well, most of the house chores are done. My grandma has also cleaned out the garden and is now planting the violets. And I have made some tea and wait here for my grandma to finish her work and have tea with me. As we Iranians say, this home smells cleanness. I love this smell.
Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Economic divide.
Before Russia's military operation against Ukraine, Russia and China cemented their ties even further. China's economic commitments to Russia surpass their bilateral trade volume in different sectors. Hi, I'm Kavitavai, and in this edition of Economic Divide, we will look at how Russia will weather its economic war against it with a little help from its friends like China and even Iran. Coming up in this program, as U.S. and the European Union ramp up their pressure against Russia to the fullest, well, China and Russia are combining their resources, China's vast industrial might with Russia's natural resources. Then we will take a look at Russia's and China's economic ties and how it's even been enhanced further. China's promise of increased commodity purchases from oil to coal to wheat. Will that help Russia weather the economic onslaught by mainly Western countries? Only time will tell. Also, we will take a look at this partnership. Is that a reason to threaten the dominance of the dollar? The wheels were in motion before, but given the new world order, plans for de-dollarization may speed up. Russia's and China's payment system and the yuan becoming internationalized.
Russia's military operation against Ukraine has sparked a massive backlash from the U.S. and its European allies. Washington and its European partners have imposed a long list of sanctions on Russia over the crisis. The U.S. and EU have imposed sanctions on Russia's biggest banks and its elite, frozen the assets of the country's central bank located outside of the country, and excluded its financial institutions from the SWIFT bank messaging system. But they have largely allowed its oil and natural gas sales to continue to flow freely to the rest of the world.
Well, there's a lot of ways these sanctions are going to affect companies because both Ukraine and Russia are major commodities exporters, metals, wheat, grain, soybeans. So right away, you've already seen there's going to be a spike in prices of certain commodities that are going to become in short supply. It's the old adage of supply and demand. John McCain famously said that, you know, Russia was a gas station masquerading as a country, but that's not really true. They actually sell many things besides oil and gas. They sell nickel, they sell iron ore, they sell chrome, very, very important metals. Aluminum. I saw that aluminum prices hit a record today. That's going to hurt anybody manufacturing airplanes.
But Russia says it can withstand the pressure. Russia is believed to try to mitigate the impact of the financial penalties by relying on energy sales and leaning on the country's reserves in gold and Chinese currency.
Putin's line is always that the West imposes sanctions no matter what. No matter what he does. So he is not communicating publicly connection between his aggressive action and the imposition of sanctions.
Putin also is expected to move funds through smaller banks and accounts of elite families not covered by the sanctions, and to also deal in cryptocurrency. So far, China has refused to join Western sanctions on Russia. Chinese purchases of oil from Russia in December surpasses purchases from Saudi Arabia. Russia announced a deal to sell 100 million tons of coal to China. It has also agreed to buy Russia's wheat amid worries of an agricultural boycott of Russia by the West. Russia and China have also signed a 30-year deal that will allow Russia to supply gas to China, just like the 1950s when China and the Soviet Union began to work closely against the U.S.-led hegemony. Moscow and Beijing have now found common geopolitical interests to work together to circumvent Western pressure. China is already angry at the U.S. over its belligerent policies and its meddling in the affairs of Taipei. China and Russia share a long border. Beijing has turned into Russia's largest source of imports and the biggest destination for its exports.
China's position on the Ukraine issue is consistent. China always decides its position and policy based on the merits of the matter. China does not approve the use of sanctions to solve problems, and even more opposed to unilateral sanctions that have no basis in international law. Practice has long proven that sanctions will not solve problems but create new ones. This will not only result in a lose-lose or losing all-sides situation in the economy, but also interfere with the process of political settlement.
When it comes to the sanction onslaught against Russia, many don't realize that the U.S. has already sanctioned Russia since the year 2014, along with Europe, for that matter. But the alignment of Russia and China has been in the works for quite some time. China is also another target of U.S. sanctions, by the way. But have the U.S. and Europe thought through the consequences of their actions? Let's take a look at some social media posts on this. That is what this user has asked. Both China and India are reverting to their own currencies and pursuing trade with Russia. The combined population total of these countries is 2.7 billion people. Does the U.S. and its allies, or do the U.S. and the allies realize the long-term strategic consequences of this? Well, analyst Tom Foudy further expanded on this here. China reverts to its own currency in pursuing trade with Russia, opposes sanctions posed by the U.S. and EU against Russia. Amid Moscow's deepening international isolation, he has said and opined that the U.S. might have to face long-standing consequences of strategic changes in trade pacts between China and Russia. Our next post, Russia partnering with China makes the U.S. plan to contain China impossible. The U.S. plan to actually impose a blockade of China's imports through the Malacca Strait would fall apart. Russia would be able to sell whatever gas and oil China needs. The ultimate U.S. goal is China and Russia to stand in the way. And then this post indicates what Europe may realize in the future when it comes to the Ukraine conflict, a kind of reality check, if you will, for Europe. The U.S. has to keep Europe on their side. I'm not sure if this will be possible after Ukraine. Those sanctions will hurt Europe massively. Also, Russia will turn to China more after this. Doesn't look so good for U.S. hegemony. All right, joining us for the Q&A in this section of the program is Yuri Maltsev, professor of economics He has a PhD in labor economics at A.W. Clausen Center for World Business. Okay, Yuri, welcome. Before Russia's military operation against Ukraine, Russia and China actually cemented their economic ties even deeper. It was only natural, since both have faced, obviously, sanctions from the U.S. and are concerned about U.S. moves against them. How important is China for Russia when it comes to what's unfolding in Ukraine?
Of course, it's very important. It's kind of like, I hate to say that, but it's kind of like two drunks are trying to cross the street and one is supporting another. And we see a lot of problems in Russian economy, and they're creating more and more problems. And Putin antagonized the whole West against himself and against Russia. From that point of view, definitely China is the only kind of the only kind of partner that he is he's really looking up for, as well as Iran. So that's the this is obvious that if you made the West your enemy, then you should look at the East. And China also is interested in Russia because Russia is a great source of all kind of natural resources. And also I'm thinking that in China, there's still a lot of people, at least the people I met there, who would think that Russia can be kind of recolonized by Chinese people in the future.
All right, let me bring in Ken Hammond here. Let's see what he thinks. He is a professor of Global and East Asian Studies at New Mexico University, who is also an activist. And he joins us from Las Cruces in New Mexico. Ken Hammond, welcome. As the U.S. and European Union have become very wary of China, we know that. Leaders in China have decided that their best geopolitical prospects, in many respects, will be their industrial, in marrying with the vast industrial might that Russia has. Obviously, Russia has a lot of formidable natural resources. Will this put U.S. and Europe maybe on the defense economically?
Well, yeah, I think that China acquires a number of commodities, a number of things from Russia, natural resources, everything from oil and natural gas to timber to minerals, mining operations and things like that. These are very important resources that China is able to acquire. And of course, those purchases are really helpful and contribute a lot to the viability of Russia's economy. China also buys a lot of military equipment and military technology from Russia, and that's very important for China's own modernization, its own military development.
It's time now for the InfoNews section of the program. It's a good time to actually try to break away from news related to the Ukrainian conflict and look at other economic news from around the world. Well, our first piece of news is on poverty, and it's in Italy, but for foreigners there. According to a report, one in three foreigners in Italy lives in poverty. Poverty affects 29.3% of foreign nationals, compared to 7.5% of Italians, and then 26.7% of families who are composed of only foreign nationals. And I'm sure poverty in Italy actually has affected the general population as a whole also. Now, the next piece takes us to the UK in terms of the energy costs there. Now, we've covered this in our previous programs, but this may jolt you into understanding the real story. Energy bills are set to hit £3,000 this year. That means 40 million are heading for fuel poverty. That's a lot. Now, at the same time, this is where it hurts. British gas company profits, they have risen. How much? 44%. So you can see that they're reaping the benefits at the expense of people. Next up, Yemen. We have not visited this next topic. UNICEF has said that two-thirds of displaced families have no income. But do you hear that in the news? And that is the double standard. The Saudi-led bombing that is occurring in that country barely gets any coverage, but the Ukraine conflict is everywhere. And, of course, on an emotional level, it has reached out to the world as a whole. Why doesn't that happen for Yemen? Our final piece, Nigeria's economy, Africa's largest economy, topped growth forecast. Gross domestic product has expanded to 3.4%. That's topped expectations. That's after shrinking 1.92% in 2020. The non-oil economy expanded by 4.73% in the quarter from a year earlier, with agriculture growing 3.58% and services increasing 5%. All right, those were some of the topics that we picked. Of course, we always like to hear from you. If you have any topics in mind, where you are, wherever part of the world, we would love to hear from you. Please send us your suggestions.
To Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
When it comes to Russia's relationship with China, trade has been at the forefront of the relationship, mainly due to the dramatic increases between the two countries. That is going to be the focus of our in-depth section. Now, looking at total trade between China and Russia, well, it jumped 35.9% based on the figures that we see here, starting from the year 2017 all the way through 2021, 35.9%. Now, in terms of, and that's a record, $146.87 billion. The commodities which Russia provided China, the most, oil, gas, coal, and agricultural commodities, 1.59 million barrels per day is how much it provided China. How much of an important commodity China views Russia for its oil, that it provides that much oil to China on a daily basis. Of course, agricultural products is also another important factor here. Now, in terms of the bilateral trade and why it has increased so much, well, we have to actually go back to the year 2014. China's exports to Russia and imports from Russia in billions of dollars is mentioned. And in terms of what we're looking at, and that's the year when Crimea claimed independence, by the way, from Ukraine, bilateral trade expanded by more than 50%. And this is from the time that the independence was announced. Now, that's over 50%, so much so that China has actually become Russia's biggest export destination. Now, the two will not, however, settle for this increase. They actually want to expand their bilateral trade even more. So for the year 2024 was $200 billion, but then they revised it. They want that figure to increase to $250 billion. So shows the depth of the relationship that these two have. And this was actually unveiled last month during Russian President Vladimir Putin's visit to Beijing for the Winter Olympics, in which the two sides agreed to increase that to $250 billion. Okay, the next challenging feat to achieve between the two is in the area of investment, Chinese investment in Russia. Western sanctions have forced Russia to look toward China for this. Chinese banks have helped Russia finance everything from infrastructure to oil and then to gas projects. This all fell under China's Belt and Road Initiative. Well, Russia is by far Beijing's largest recipient of state sector financing overall, where we take a look at, for example, the 107 loans that have been given from China to Russia over the course of, 17 years, again, as an example, which amounted to $125 billion. I am sure you can bet on this, that that's going to increase based on the sanction onslaught by the West on Russia. All right, let's try to get some analysis into this. Rejoining us is Yuri Maltsev, professor of economics. Yuri Maltsev, welcome back. Food, energy, and banking deals, just the latest signals that we're looking at when it comes to China's economic alignment with Russia. Trade can increase between the two, as I just mentioned, but sanctions leveled against Russia, it's, however, not an effective way to solve problems. How do you see this going forward?
Well, I think that sanctions, they definitely work. And the problem with sanctions, with all kind of sanctions against Russia or against anybody else, that it would be the ordinary people would suffer. Mr. Putin would eat and drink nothing else. I mean, he wouldn't suffer by these sanctions, nor his cronies. But ordinary people, yes, it's already a problem for them to get even out of Russia. It's impossible because the embassies are closed, consular departments are closed, airlines do not travel to Russia. So that's this is the problem for real people, not for Putin and the likes. But from another hand, I can see that you must do something about it because he is raping and maiming and killing people in another country with absolutely no justification for that.
Well, Ken Hammond rejoins us. Let's see what he thinks, professor of global and East Asian studies at New Mexico University. Ken Hammond, welcome back. Before Russia's military operation against Ukraine, Russia and China cemented their economic ties even more. And we just covered that. For example, they want to increase their trade to $250 billion per year. At the same time, we're looking at how China is going to need to buy energy and food from Russia. How important is China for Russia in order to weather out what Russia will be going through for a limited period of time, maybe even longer?
I think right now that one of the key things in terms of helping Russia to deal with the pushback from the West, you know, from the United States and NATO, is that China has been working on developing its own system of international settlements, its system of settling financial and commercial transactions between different countries, apart from the SWIFT system. And that SWIFT system is really, in many ways, the most important component of the sanctions that the United States is trying to impose on Russia. China has a system in which international payments can be settled using the Chinese currency, using the renminbi.
The rising tensions between Russia and the West and the sanctions imposed on the country could bring Russia and its allies closer together. One of those allies is Iran. Tehran and Moscow enjoy burgeoning economic and military cooperation. Trade between the two countries has been increasing in recent years, especially after the U.S. quit the nuclear deal and reimposed sanctions on Iran in 2018. Currently, the volume of trade between Iran and Russia is $4 billion. It is expected to reach $10 billion annually following President Raisi's visit to Russia earlier this year. Moscow is reportedly planning to build a new port near the town of Lagan on the Russian Caspian coast. The $1.6 billion port, with a reported capacity of 12.5 million tons, is said to be chiefly aimed at increasing Russia's trade with Iran and also with India. The International North-South Transport Corridor, or INSTC, a 4,500-mile-long transportation system involving rail, road, and shipping routes connecting India to Russia through Iran, could also play a pivotal role to help Russia circumvent sanctions. Iran has plenty of potentials to supply Russia with agricultural and consumer good products. Russia has also developed what's called the SPFS, its own version of SWIFT. The goal of this system would be to recruit numerous international banks, enough participants to deter the threat of Western economic sanctions, particularly from the U.S. That system can help Russian banks to do their transaction with countries like Iran, China, and India. Iran and Russia have also been planning to connect their power grids. The plan could now be implemented to help both countries reap the benefits of their economic cooperation.
The Ukrainian conflict is one that is being closely followed by China, in case China becomes a victim of U.S. and West's harsh sanctions regime. China is particularly looking at Russia's economic and financial vulnerabilities. China has pushed for self-reliance in key economic areas of technology and the payments needed to settle trade to minimize its weaknesses. Those weaknesses include dependence on the U.S. dollar. China has in recent years sought to internationalize its currency, but what does that exactly mean? That means that China has settled more trade with the yuan. Of course, that includes Russia, and when it comes to the yuan, it accounted for 13.1% of the Russian Central Bank's foreign currency reserves last June, compared with just 0.1% in June 2017. China's central bank is developing a digital currency which would have the benefit of further encouraging yuan settlement for trade. So the role of the yuan is becoming more prominent by the day and will surely accelerate due to the Ukraine conflict. But what about SWIFT? And does China have plans for an alternate payment system like Russia does? The answer is yes, China has an alternative system to bypass SWIFT. It's called the Cross-Border Interbank Payment System, CIPS. The system actually saw a 75% increase in processing volume last year, but it still has a long way to go since 80% of CIPS transactions still involve SWIFT. Now comes China's reliance on imports. What is it doing about that in case it becomes a victim of US and Western sanctions? In recent years, China has increased the development of homegrown technologies. These include things like semiconductors and advanced materials to aircraft. Although China may have much bigger and more diversified economy than Russia, it still depends on imports. The top imports of China are crude petroleum, integrated circuits, iron ore, petroleum gas, and cars. The countries it imported from mostly from South Korea, Japan, Australia, Germany, and United States. China was the largest exporter and the second largest importer in the year 2020. But here is a point many don't realize. In 2021, China was the second largest partner for EU exports of goods and the largest partner for EU imports of goods, with an overall trade figure of a little over $440 billion for the year 2020. That does it for me, Mahdi, for this segment.
The U.S. and its Western allies are keen on bringing Russia to its knees economically, since they can't do that militarily, even though they are pumping Ukraine with tons of weapons, telling Ukraine to confront Russia. Well, the U.S. has even gone as far as going to Venezuela with the aim of appealing to the Maduro government there, which it does not even officially recognize, and to weaken its relationship with Putin. Yet allies of Russia like China, Iran, Venezuela, and Cuba, they have all been on the receiving end of U.S. sanctions and even military threats. Why should they reverse all of that and fall prey to a government that is not trustworthy? I'm talking about the U.S. and, of course, the White House headed by Joe Biden. That does it for this edition of Economic Divide. It was great having you. For me, Kometa Hawaii, it's goodbye until the next program.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters. 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iransat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastorday.com/en. And now, you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.